Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast from the Football Grad Network. I'm your host, Bryce Dunn, and we're back after match day 4. Joining me this evening is Manu Veth. Manu, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, Bryce. It's just the two of us today, which is strange. Kind of reminds me of the good old days when we did the Mexican podcast together. But yeah, doing pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, it does remind me of the Galazzo days, I must say. Though, in my time zone, it was a little bit easier to watch the games this weekend than it does with those. But yeah, we're only two up top today. Chris will be back next week, I'm sure. But today we're going to focus on, obviously, match day 4 in the Bundesliga. There's plenty to talk about. But also preview and look into the sides that are going to be featuring in Europe this week. We've got the Europa League returning and, of course, the Champions League. Yes, it's that time already. Manu, it seems like no length of time ago we were talking about a transfer window. And then... well, we don't talk about international breaks that much, do we? No one's interested in that much. Apart from when Northern Ireland can finish bottom of their group with no points and still get to a qualifier and win a penalty shootout to almost go through. I don't know what's going on. I don't think anyone does. Anyway, back to German football. Let's talk about match day 4. We've seen quite a few 1-1 draws, but also... also a lot of action as well, not so many home winners, but how about we start off with talking a little bit about the teams that are going to be in Europe in Bayer Leverkusen. So Leverkusen were away to with a horrid start. So for Leverkusen coming in and winning 1-0 there, a goal from Alario on the 30th minute. Manu, so we normally talk about Peter Bosch and his side scoring plenty of goals, but then also conceding plenty of goals. That doesn't seem to be the case this time around. They're barely scoring at all. There was two goals before this and just three draws, and now they've just added a third goal. Leon Bailey with his first game back in the action, but it's a bit unlike them, really.
Well, I think it's because they lost a lot of attacking talent, right? When you lose... Kevin Volland and you lose Kai Havertz, and the season before you used Julian Brandt, and the only addition is Patrick Schick up front. That's just not enough. And I know that there was that failed last minute transfer of Milo Drasica. It's one of those stories of failed fax machines and documents not being handed in time. And I think that would have been a great addition for them. If they actually could have gotten this across the line. I mean, from what I understand, the contracts were all signed and the deal was pretty much complete, but they just ran out of time to get it done before the window shut in Germany, right? And I think they're kind of paying the price a little bit for that, Bryce, that they just don't have enough depth in the attack. And, for Bosch's football, that's so important, right? That, variability up front to have players play different positions to switch it up. And yeah, I think this is going to be quite a difficult year for them in many ways, and in a very condensed schedule on top of that, right? But the fact that they're playing Europa League, they're playing so many games back to back to back, and not having quite that depth, I think that's going to really hurt them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we all know that, you know, Bosch's sides tend to like to give away points needlessly at times when they seem to be playing well. And if they're not scoring goals, this is going to add to their woes. How important is it for them to have Leon Bailey back on the side?
Yeah, I think it's good that they kept him. That was another player that they considered maybe selling. I know Tottenham were sniffing around, checking whether he was available or not. And having him still available for the team, I think it's important, especially because there's now new arrivals, right? So him being back in the side is key. It's absolutely key.
Yeah, absolutely. And he did look threatening and ended up with an assist in that game. All the difference, the one goal. So let's look ahead a little bit, Manu, to Thursday night. They're going to be facing a French opponent in Nice. How do you see this one going? I mean, it's hard to tell what form's going to be like for many of these sides. Yeah. You know, when games are played thick and fast at the moment, you've always got the threat as well of players being tired from the international break, which, you know, there seem to be three games for a lot of these players. And then obviously the corona threat as well. Now you throw this into the mix as well. How do you think they're going to get on against Nice? And then I suppose, you know, if we look forward in the competition.
I think it's never been more complicated to look ahead to games in Europe than this year. And because of the many factors that you mentioned, the amount of games, the fact that teams could, face, you know, automatic defeats, because if they don't get enough players onto the field, then the new rule is that then a game will be automatically counted 3-0 against them, right? The COVID-19 is making things very complicated. And then on top of that, France is, I think Ligue 1, we can't really underestimate Ligue 1. I think a lot of people do, but remember, they, like the Bundesliga, had two teams in the top four of the Champions League, right? In that tournament in August. But at the same time, they didn't finish this season last year. They ended up calling it quits before anyone else. And the final standings were calculated using a points per game average, right? Which means like that teams like Olympique Lyon missed out and Nice qualified. So it's weird. I find it really difficult to predict this year where teams are, right? Because of all these things. And even if you say, okay, this is a really good team with a really good squad, but all of a sudden four players are out with COVID, what's that going to do to the overall constitution of a team, right? So it's so difficult. I would say that looking at this group as a whole, Bryce, that is the most difficult opponent. Nice is a team that Lucien Favre worked there, right? A few years ago. Famously Balotelli, he was actually one of the few clubs where he worked really well out as well. I think this is going to be the most difficult opponent in this group. And for Leverkusen, I think the expectations are that they're going to finish in the top two and qualify for the next round.
Yeah, this is it. It's certainly going to be the toughest opponent you would imagine anyway that they'll come up against. And Dante as well, formerly of Wolfsburg, will probably know Leverkusen fairly well from his time in the Bundesliga. So we'll have to see just how that goes. But as you said, I would imagine Leverkusen will be hoping to get through that group and go deep into the competition. So let's talk about the other Europa League side in Hoffenheim, who, as rightly so, had been getting plenty of plaudits this season. And they came up against Borussia Dortmund, who we will get into a little bit further with their Champions League tie coming up. But unfortunately, on this occasion, they lost 1-0. Manu, you and I were just talking before we came on air about Hoffenheim failing to have their full side available. Many teams did have this scenario, resting players after the international break. But unfortunately for Hoffenheim, it was a Corona or COVID related issue for three of their players.
Yeah, and the biggest one is Andre Kramaric, right? The player that Bayern Munich targeted on transfer deadline day or the days before transfer deadline day. Hoffenheim put a 40 million euro price tag onto him, and that ended that debate really quickly because I don't think Bayern wanted to spend that much money for what would have been essentially a backup striker for Robert Lewandowski. But this hurts Hoffenheim, not having Andre Kramaric, and watching the game against Borussia Dortmund. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more in depth because we're going to do the Dortmund group next, right? I think that you could really see that Hoeneß plays a well-organized type of football. And I think that when we look at Sebastian Hoeneß, who has such a famous last name because of his uncle, Uli, right? And his father, and the family has made a big mark on Bundesliga football overall. And he's really done a very good job with this Hoffenheim side. I mean, they beat Bayern Munich 4-1 with a fit Kramaric in the side, right? So I think them not having Kramaric for this game it makes such a huge difference. And it's one of the brutal realities of COVID that people might get infected. And even, you know, if they're infected and they just test positive and they don't get sick, they still have to, they're still going to be out for 2 weeks, right? And we have Hoffenheim Kaderabak, for example, one of his family members was diagnosed or were tested positive for COVID-19, and therefore he is missing this game as well, because if you have someone, if you are contact person one, right? And in Germany, that means if you have to been in close contact with a person for more than 50 minutes during the time where people shed the virus, that means 2 weeks of isolation. And so you could be healthy, but you could still have to isolate. And I think this is, again, something that a lot of clubs will have to wrestle with this year. And, because we don't have the time really to make amendments for it either, right? Because the schedule is insane. I mean, we're going to be in match day three by November 3rd. We're going to be in match day three of the Champions League, Bryce. That's 3 weeks from now. We're going to have Champions League football this week, the week after. It's such a condensed schedule. And, so I think it's again, they're facing Srena Zvezda, right? For their first match, Red Star Belgrade. Under normal circumstances, I would say, and a difficult opponent, but it's so hard to judge at the moment where those teams are at.
Yeah, well, as you said, Manu, you know, there's going to be a lot of the clubs that are going to be balancing, you know, that act of, you know, trying to keep players fresh, you know, with so many games coming up. There's plenty of talk of, you know, games every 3 to 4 days for the European sides, and then you've got domestic cup competitions as well, and then you have to hope that nobody has to isolate as well. And you know, this was a massive loss obviously for Hoffenheim, and maybe would have made the difference at the weekend. We've seen a close victory for Dortmund. You know, I thought Hoffenheim were very well organized. Gacinovic, you know, could have scored early doors for them as well. So, you know, on another day with a full side, maybe it would have been a different result, but you're just not to know. And this is something that everyone's going to have to go through. So looking at their group, they have Red Star Belgrade, you know, during the week. How do we see that game going? Manu, you might know a little bit more about them than I do, if I'm being honest. But will Hoffenheim also be looking at this as, we've got a good thing going on in the league at the moment, that is where we will have our priority, or are they going to try and fight on both fronts?
Well, you're pointing out a very interesting question, like what are clubs going to prioritize this year? And for many years, Chris and I went to Leverkusen and we spoke to Simon Rolfes about this and said, like, we Bundesliga clubs have to put a bigger priority on the Europa League, right? Because they have definitely underperformed in that competition. And this year, once again, we lost the Bundesliga side, to AEK Athens in the playoffs. So of course, you know, maybe if with a return match that would have gone differently, but it's an interesting question. Like, what is a side like Hoffenheim going to do? Are they just going to bin the Europa League and focus on the Bundesliga? And because I think with the team that they have and the coach that they have, they could potentially finish in the top four, which means Champions League, right? So what's more important, playing in the Europa League under very difficult circumstances, or maybe binning the Europa League and focusing on the Bundesliga and trying to get the best results out of that? It's walking a fine line. As for Srena Zvezda, I think, you know, this is a team that you can't underestimate. I don't know what the constitution of the side is like how many players are fit, how many players are potentially, you know, what's it going to be like for them traveling with the COVID situation and all that. It's a hard one to say. I do know that they have a very good keeper in Milan Borjan, Canadian, right? They have been fantastic for years in developing young talent. So we're probably going to see players play in this game that we're then going to see later on being snapped up by big European sides. So I personally think it's going to be a really interesting match, but it's going to be very difficult to predict what's going to happen and how Sebastian Hoeneß is going to take on this challenge.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be the interesting side of it, just to see, you know, based on the performance and the team that he puts out, how, you know, how important he sees this competition. I'd be surprised if he doesn't take it very seriously. But let's talk about Hoffenheim's opponent at the weekend in Borussia Dortmund. So, as we mentioned, it was a 1-0 victory. We've seen Haaland come off the bench. Yes, he didn't start. Precautionary, I think, after playing so many international games. Also, Jude Bellingham, rookie of the month in the Bundesliga, also starting on the bench, but Haaland came off the bench with Ross, and they managed to combine for the only goal of the game. Haaland then went on to hit the post, but that was it. Let's talk a little bit about the performance at the weekend against Hoffenheim. As we've just said, they were very organised, Manu, but Borussia Dortmund, I think I was speaking to you during the game, and I was saying it's not the prettiest of matches. And you were saying, yeah, but this is the type of game and performance that they need every so often, just efficiently get the job done.
Yeah, and Chris said they basically had to better the Bayern result, right? I think that's also correct. I mean, Bayern lost 4-1 to Hoffenheim, and Dortmund beat them 1-0. So if you want to challenge for the title, you have to beat the results that your opponent is putting out. And they did that here. I think that's the positive. Definitely wasn't pretty. It definitely was, I think, a result that, in my opinion, had 0-0 written all over it until Marco Reus and Haaland came on. I think that the two made a big difference in this game. You could see right away when Haaland comes on, it changes everything. And Marco Reus as well, I think, you know, he doesn't necessarily maybe have the legs right now for the full 90 minutes, but he does make an impact when he does come on the field. And I think that is what maybe Borussia Dortmund have this year. The fact that they were able to keep Jadon Sancho, right, is such a big one for me, because it means they have so much depth up front now, and they didn't have to replace that depth, and they'd be able to actually add players like Jude Bellingham to the side, where I think he is a wonderful football player. The fact that Gio Reyna is now emerging as this wunderkind, super talent, that gives them a lot of options to rotate and make changes late on in the game, and they did that. And you know, they Lucien Favre brought on the victory from the bench. I mean, this is 100% what happened here. I think Dortmund had this game under control. I think it would have been a little bit different if Andre Kramaric would have been fit. I think Kramaric gives Dortmund a little bit more problems here in this game. But in this dense schedule, having the fitter and deeper squad makes a difference, if that makes sense, right? Because you are able then to say, okay, well, their top player is out, and we have two top players on the bench, and we'll bring them on. That is going to make the difference in many games this year. And it was really interesting listening to Hans-Joachim Watzke. He was on the Aktuelle Sportstudio ZDF in Germany on Saturday night, which is a very popular TV show. And he talked about this game, and he said, look, we were in control of this game. I mean, my frustration was only that we didn't score goals. And I actually think he's right. I think they were in control. It wasn't pretty, but you never really got the sense that Hoffenheim were going to win this game, right? And I think, and this is some of what we discussed among us in our group, in our secret WhatsApp group, let's call it that, that in last year they would have possibly lost that game, right? This would have written like a 1-0, late 1-0 all over it. So I think Dortmund can take a lot of positives from this result.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. As you said, Hoffenheim may have been well organized and probably kept the score down, made it difficult for Borussia Dortmund, but never really looked like much of a threat. We're forgetting that, as you said, Reyna always looks a threat, and he did have a chance cleared off the line, and Mounier did hit the top of the crossbar as well. So there were a few chances that on another day could have went in for Borussia Dortmund. But so I think something that we have to talk about, which seems to be going under the radar, is three clean sheets out of four games for Dortmund. That's not something a little bit like with Leverkusen that you normally associate with them. And I think that's going to make all the difference this year as well. I mean, how do you feel, Manu?
It's interesting, Watzke, there was the question asked, Watzke was asked a question about the German national team, and the problems that Germany has in defense. And I mean, they're quite obvious, right? For those who saw the international break games, the defense is an absolute mess for Germany at the moment. And he said, well, we would have someone who could clean up the mess. He's unfortunately not getting nominated at the moment, but yeah, Mats Hummels has been outstanding for me. He's making a big difference in that back line. And it's not just him. I think that with the amount of games that you have, maybe the focus is also on just being defensively sound first and then worry about the other things second, if that makes sense, right? Because it's much less physically consuming to play a holding game and do actually sit back and then just be there when it matters rather than every game have attacking fireworks. And so maybe Favre's football with the schedule that we're facing this year is possibly actually the way to go. You know, this really methodical approach to every game, because you will see everyone will drop points. Everyone will drop points this year because it's like such a tight schedule. So for you almost want to minimize the amount of points you're dropping rather than, you know, getting the most amount of points out of it, if that makes sense. So I think maybe Favre's style of football is actually going to be something that's going to help them during COVID-19.
Yeah, that's a good point. That may be all the difference. You're being more organized than ever and keeping things strict and tight, you know, with all these games coming up. So let's talk about the game coming up. I mean, we'll talk about the next match day, because that's going to be an interesting fixture as well. But we'll do that later on in the pod. I know we've got a good question about it and a few topics. But before that, they've got the Champions League to play on Tuesday night. They're facing Lazio. Possibly the toughest game in the group, I would say. I mean, Lazio have started fairly positively in Serie A, unfortunately, though, getting a 3-0 defeat at the weekend to Sampdoria. All the talk is also going to be about Immobile and his return facing his former side, who he played for Dortmund 2014-2015. He didn't score a lot of goals in the league, in Europe and Cup. He was a little bit better, but some would call him a bit of a failure of a transfer. Is that going to be extra motive for him and his side?
Yeah, I think that's been the big question in Germany about Ciro Immobile and whether he's going to be extra motivated for this game. I mean, he was Europe's top goal scorer last year, right? Scoring the most league goals in any of the, I think it's the top five leagues that they calculate. They use a factor 2, and then from the lower leagues it's factor 1.5, right? And then that's how they calculate the golden boot. He just beat out Robert Lewandowski, although Immobile played more league games, and I think that was a big factor in this. But he's a top striker. He's not a striker, you know, who's quite as all round and gifted as someone like Robert Lewandowski. I think he's a very classical Italian striker. He works in a system that is set and built around him and very deadly in front of goal. I watched the Italy-Netherlands game during the international break. I had it on in the background while I was working, and you don't see a lot of him when he plays, but you know, when he's in the right spot at the right time, he will score. And I think the big problem for him when he was in the Bundesliga is that we don't have the expectations from our striker that they would just hang out in the box and score. I think that's in Germany, those days are over, and maybe in Serie A it's a little bit different because of the entire tactical system is set up differently in Italian football, right? So you expect different things from your players. It doesn't mean they're better or worse. It's very hard sometimes to compare different leagues and across different countries because the style of football does vary quite a bit, right? So I think the expectations in Germany was that he came in and he would replace someone like Robert Lewandowski, who was not just a number 9, but is also a 10 and an 11 and can fulfill so many different roles. And I think that was just the shoes were too big to fill for him in this regard, right? I mean, in the end, it was Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang who emerged as being the successor to Lewandowski at the time. And that's always because he's a much more multidimensional player. And I think that's what you want from your strikers in German football. They have to be multidimensional, right? They're not one position striker. They are players that fulfill multiple roles. So it's going to be interesting to see Immobile in these games, because Champions League is different than Serie A, right? And I'm really curious to see how this, because I think this is the key fixture, Bryce, of when you look at this group overall with Lazio and Bruges and Zenit. I mean, I know Russian football quite well. We have the Football Grad podcast, right? And Zenit is a good side. They are a team that have a lot of money due to, because of Gazprom. But I do think that Borussia Dortmund and Lazio, that is the key fixture. Those two teams are going to finish first and second in this group.
Manu, you've obviously answered the question I was going to put to you next, saying where they're going to finish in this group. But if they get through the group, I mean, you know, is Dortmund expecting to, obviously they're expecting to go as far as they can, but, you know, where do you think their expectations maybe lie? Where, do you think they want to, you know, get to at least the quarters, the semis, even further?
Oh, man, Bryce, it's so difficult this year, right? I mean, I say this so many times, I sound like a broken record, because... But it just is. It's so hard to predict. And I mean, there might
What would you say their expectations maybe are?
Like, at least quarterfinals. It must be at least the quarterfinals. You have to get out of the group and you have to get to the round of 16, right? You have to get to the quarterfinals. And once you're in the quarterfinals, so many things can happen. That's the thing. I mean, look at last year. Leipzig easily got to the quarterfinals. I think they played Tottenham, right? And brushed them aside like they didn't exist. It was like the difference was huge. But Dortmund played PSG off the field at home. And then 2 weeks later, the coronavirus crisis hit. And it full-on hit. And they had to play in an empty stadium in Paris, which I think hurt Dortmund more than Paris. I still think to this day that Dortmund would have probably gone through if there was attendance in that game, because I think they are a team that thrives off that atmosphere, right? So it's so hard to say in so many ways, but I do think that the quarterfinal is the minimum goal for Borussia Dortmund. And once you're in the quarterfinal, you know, couple results go your way. You can be in the semifinals so quick, and then in the final. And I mean, we saw that at the tournament last year. And who knows what the Champions League finals are going to be like. Maybe we're going to have another tournament like last year, right? And once you're in the quarterfinals, it's single elimination, and you can go very deep in this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. You get to the knockout stage of any competition and, well, you just don't know what can happen, eh? But let's move on then and talk about the other Champions League sides. And we'll begin with Bundesliga table toppers RB Leipzig, sitting up there with 3 wins and 1 draw, 10 points after 4 match days. This weekend, seeing off Augsburg, who also had a very positive start, only conceding 1 goal before this matchup. Unfortunately, on this occasion, they managed to concede 2, and it was 2-0. As we've seen, a first half header from Angelino. Yes, a header again. And then we've seen Upamecano have an effort cleared off the line. But then finally, Paulsen scored an absolute belter, didn't he, to finish the game off, ending 2-0. So a really positive game after the international break for RB Leipzig. They're sitting top of the league. I would imagine that Nagelsmann was rather happy with that performance and to be sitting where they are.
Yeah, he must be. I mean, is he ever happy, Bryce? I don't get this.
you know what? I can absolutely feel for that as well, because he always seems a bit too busy in his own head, I think.
Yeah. The most interesting press conferences I ever had were with Julian Nagelsmann. If you use the wrong word or the wrong question, you are in for a lecture. I think it's happened to both me and Chris. I've gotten a lecture on economics once by Nagelsmann, because I used efficiency rather than effectiveness, and he explained the difference to me. It was very, very interesting. Didn't answer my question, but it was very interesting. I think this is someone who is never quite happy with the football put out by his side. I think he always works on improving and trying to to get a better result. And I think that Leipzig are in a very challenging group, with Basaksehir here, who they're facing first. See what I did there, Bryce? I pronounced it for you, so you wouldn't have to stumble over it.
No, and you have no idea, listeners, how many times I've wrote this down and tried to say it before the pod started. Now I'll just let Manu say it.
Yeah, and I probably still got it wrong. But Basaksehir here, and then, of course, Man United and PSG. And I think this is my group of death this year in terms that one of the...
One gift that never gets returned? Trick question. It's three gifts, beer, wine, and spirits. And with Drizly, you can send the gift of drinks right to your loved one's doors. Drizly lets you compare prices from local liquor stores on a huge selection of beer, wine, and holiday spirits, then get them delivered right to that lucky someone's door in under 60 minutes. And right now, Drizly is giving customers $5 off their first order. Just enter promo code JINGLE at checkout. Download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's DRIZLY.com.
It wouldn't be the holiday season if there wasn't candy, right? Celebrate the holiday season with the Holiday Crush. They've sprinkled candy with a holiday theme and fun-packed challenges every week for 5 whole weeks, finishing on January 4th. The more challenges you complete, the better your chances of unwrapping delicious rewards. So, are you ready to crush the holidays? Play the Holiday Crush now. Download it from the App Store, Google Play, or Windows Store for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Bigger sides, I mean, Leipzig is a semi-finalist of the Champions League. PSG is the finalist of the Champions League. Man United, for all their problems, are still a very big club. One of those three, maybe more, because we should never underestimate Basaksehir here, right? I mean, who knows, right? Especially with COVID. One of those teams could be gone. Not just from the Champions League, but completely once the winter comes around. And so I think this is a really difficult group. And for Leipzig, it's going to be absolutely key to win their first game. You cannot in this group allow to drop points, against Basaksehir here. And that's no disrespect, especially at home, right? They need to win this game. And, those 3 points are going to be very important because I assume that United and PSG are going to take points of each other. I'm pretty sure that Leipzig will take points of United and PSG as well. It's very hard to really see how these results are going to pan out. So I think that first game is 100% key. And Nagelsmann actually said something really interesting today. He said it's going to be important to counter Basaksehir's gut football. Right? Like they play a very emotional style of football. And I think what he means by that is to really focus on the fundamentals and Leipzig's match plan and just don't get swept up in the emotions. And I think that is going to be 100% key in this because when I saw Basaksehir here live in last November, when they played against Gladbach, and this was a game that Gladbach had under absolute control. They just needed a draw and then they would have advanced. And a late goal then sealed it for Basaksehir here, and they went through and Gladbach were out. And this is a team that doesn't give up. I mean, they won the Turkish championship. They're the first team that's not named Fenerbahce, Galatasaray, or Beşiktaş in many, many decades to win the title, right? And so I think this is a team that they can't underestimate. And I think they really need to focus on the fundamentals to get the 3 points that they need for this group.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, it's important that RB managed to get that early 3 points on the board against Basaksehir here. Tried my best there. The Turkish side haven't started very well, sitting second from bottom, but it's early days, only 5 games in there. So you don't know what their priorities may be, but with Demba Ba up front, I suppose they've got a well-seasoned, you know, veteran up front. You know, he knows a lot of Europe pretty well. You know, so there will be that threat. But Manu, I was listening. We talked about Nagelsmann, you know, his style and that. And Tyler Adams had said that, you know, no matter where the ball is on the field, he expects that when they win the ball for it to get up into the final third in 8 seconds. And You look at the likes of Manchester United, you know, 8 seconds, not that demanding. But you see the likes of Manchester United, you see the likes of PSG. And these are all teams that are very... attack heavy, I would say. So it's going to be a very entertaining group, I would imagine. We talk about the group of death, but it's going to be fun watching a group of death. Don't you agree?
Yeah, 100%. And I think people should not underestimate what Leipzig are going to do in this group. I think I saw some English pundits say that Tottenham had it easy when they got Leipzig in the elimination last year, right? And well, turned out it wasn't that easy after all, right? They disbanded Tottenham pretty easily. So yeah, I think this is going to be a very entertaining group. And yeah, it's 8 seconds. Leipzig, I expected to move forward 8 seconds. It used to be 10. That was Joachim Löw. He said 10 seconds, back before the 2014 World Cup. So Nagelsmann just moved the benchmark and said 8. That's not a lot of time, right? From winning the ball to going onto the attack. He's basically shortened what is expected for most teams by 2 seconds. And, that's a 2 seconds is a long time when you're trying to win the ball and move forward. So yeah, it's really interesting what's happening in Leipzig. I know a lot of people see them critically, but I think it's really interesting what's happening there. And Tyler Adams, I mean, he's a player that explains, is great to listen to especially for American listeners and English speaking listeners, because he explains the system that Leipzig plays so well, right? On a day to day basis. And he's so available to journalists that we really get a lot of insight from him and the way that Nagelsmann ticks in so many ways. I interviewed Tyler Adams, during the COVID-19 break, and it was really fascinating just listening to him and the expectations that they have at the club.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting year, I think, for Leipzig. And yeah, I look forward to watching them all the way. So let's talk about the third Champions League side in Borussia Mönchengladbach. And before we talk about them facing Inter Milan during the week, I suppose we better talk about their match day 4 performance. They had a 1-1 draw in the late kickoff on Saturday against Wolfsburg. Florian Neuhaus came back from international break with a goal for Germany, but it wasn't him who scored on this occasion. It was Jonas Hofmann who scored from the penalty spot. Unfortunately, Wout Weghorst spoiled the occasion for them. So, Manu, how do you feel that Borussia Mönchengladbach are getting on this season? I mean, if we look at the table, they're sitting in 11th. 1 win, 2 draws, and 1 loss. So it's been an okay season so far, hasn't it? Though, I don't know about you, I kind of expected them to brush Wolfsburg aside, as they seem to be constantly struggling to get their players fit and on the field. Just when they were coming back and fit the likes of Thuram, then they had international breaks, and now they're trying to get fit once again.
Yeah, actually, you know, before, maybe should have taken COVID into account, because I actually thought Gladbach are going to do quite well, but it is difficult for them, even though they were able to keep all the top players after last year. And they had a very good year last year, and they played some fantastic football, at some point even challenging for the title, right? And I think it's going to be very difficult to maintain that high level, and the national team games don't help. I think they don't help anyone. I think that maybe in a year like COVID, we should have maybe been to national team games altogether. I think there is no place right now to play what is, in my opinion, glorified friendlies and qualification games for a tournament that might not even happen, right? Because club teams are always going to prioritize in their club competitions over the Euro. And who knows what COVID looks like next summer, or whether we have a vaccine that allows them to even play. So with that in mind, Gladbach, as long as UEFA is going to stick to this schedule with all these national team games, Gladbach are going to struggle, because they're going to have players come in and come out, right? Out of the squad, in the squad. And this Champions League group is really hard. I mean, we just said Leipzig were in a group of death, but this group is much easier priced, because
this group is stacked.
Because you have Inter, right? Very good team. Saw Inter last year when they played Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund beat them 3-2 after being down 2-0. But this is a good team. Very good team. Then you got Real Madrid. I mean, we don't need to say much more than that. And then Shakhtar Donetsk, and Shakhtar Donetsk are a good team too. You know, they're a side that are always in the Champions League, and often not just in the Champions League, but also make it out of the group stage, right? From a smaller league, in Ukrainian Premier League, but still they are a good side. And with all of this in mind, this is hard. This is going to be very hard. I mean, on the other hand, maybe Inter will also have to rotate players, or maybe because in Italy, we've seen this now twice, right? That Juventus is in quarantine right now and Napoli weren't allowed to travel. Maybe there will be 3 points to be had because a team might not be allowed to show up, right? But it's really difficult. This group is very difficult. And I think for Gladbach, it will be an enormous success to even finish third and qualify for the Europa League beyond the winter. Anything else, I think, is a bonus.
Yeah, I do feel a little bit for Gladbach. You're getting into the Champions League, and then I feel for them on two fronts. One, that's a very difficult group, you know, and it's unfortunate, but that's the way it goes. You're in with Europe's best, and the possibility of getting a tricky group is always going to be there. You have to deal with the cards that are dealt to you. But I think with the way the world is right now, with the pandemic, yeah, it's not making things any easy for them. You know, I think we've seen them perform very well last season, domestically, especially. And this is a bit frustrating, I'm sure, for them, you know, to go into this tie, you know, with the issues that they're having. But I suppose everyone's having these, as you mentioned, Manu, but it's going to be tricky for them. And maybe the Europa League, you know, and them getting into that by a third place finish wouldn't be a bad result, really. But they're really going to have it up against them. The only way I feel better for them is that they have Mainz next weekend. So, you know, things will be okay, guys. So let's move on to the final Champions League side. I wonder who that could be. Who are we missing? Oh, maybe the champions, Bayern Munich, of course. So at the weekend, we'll obviously talk about their match day game. First, they took on our newly promoted Armenian Bielefeld, winning 4-1, 4-0 up at halftime. Two goals from Lewandowski and two from Müller.
Who else?
Exactly. I know, just insert, you know, a quote on Lewandowski right now, I think. Fantastic first half performance. It got the job done nice and early. Goretzka playing very well too. In fact, playing very well throughout, really. Though Armenia Bielefeld, credit to them, and even Hansi Flick said, you know, that he must, say congratulations on them playing football in that second half. They came out with intent and really tried to give it all they could. Unfortunately, some of the players reported that they probably would need an oxygen tent to get over the effort that they put in the second half. Duran getting a goal there, lovely step over and finish against Neuer. So, Manu, it seems like, you know, Bayern Munich's loss and then, you know, a last-minute victory, you know, in the last match day, seems to be behind them, rather efficient and enthralling goal against a newly promoted side.
Yeah, we have to talk about the amount of games that Bayern players have played, right? Because they went on an international break. Then all these players came back on Wednesday. Some of them were still traveling on Wednesday. On Thursday, they played in the cup. We completely forgot about that game, didn't we? They had a cup game on Thursday. Then on Saturday, they played Bielefeld. I actually really enjoyed this game, Bryce, because we talked about this in our group, that Bielefeld, like Paderborn last year, they are actually trying to play football. They're actually trying to not just be destructive and play negative football, but they're actually trying. And I think the expectations are fully there, that they know that, okay, well, it has to be a very good year for them to stay in the league, right? And if they manage it, they're only going to be able to manage it by playing good football. So this was a much more difficult result for Bayern than it looked at first glance, because they had to actually play an opponent that was more than willing to play football with them. And getting that late red card to Tolisso, for example, those are the kind of things that you just can't happen to you right now in this season, because you're already so thin and you're already rotating. And Bayern Munich, I mean, how often do we have to say it? 250 days, 57 games if they make it to the later stages of all the competitions that they're in. And they usually do, right? They usually make it to all the later stages of the competitions that they're in, whether it be the Champions League, whether it be the Cup, whether it be Bundesliga. And then they play all these additional games, DFL Super Cup, UEFA Super Cup. So this is tricky. It's really tricky. And I think that when you look at this group, I think they are going to finish in top two in this group, 100% price. But I think they are facing Atletico at a moment in time where Atletico probably would like to play them. You know, even though we learned this just before we went on the show that Diego Costa is out, but I think they'd be like, well, this is a great time to play them because they have already basically played half a season. They already have half a season in their bones. Whereas we had a break and then, you know, just started our La Liga season and our schedule is a lot less condensed and we can basically make them run and work hard and hit them where it hurts them the most. And remember, Bayern hate playing Atletico Madrid. So I think when you look at this group overall, this is a big stumbling block and it's going to be a really fascinating game.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about your Simone and his Atletico side. I don't think anyone wants to face them. I mean, everyone said last year, yeah, Liverpool will be fine. They'll get past mm-hmm. them. I knew all along, and I'm sure plenty of other people did. Now, they set up and they make it difficult to break down. They're maybe not as strong a side as what they have been in the past. But they're not going to be an easy ticket whatsoever. Well, what I am looking forward to in this group is actually Salzburg.
Yeah.
I think the Salzburg-Bayern games, that could be great fun.
I was both excited. And when we get closer to the game, they're playing each other first time November 3rd. We're going to have some guys from the other Bundesliga podcast on, right? And we're going to chat a little bit more in depth about this fixture because it is a little bit of a local derby in some ways. Salzburg and Munich, you know this. I grew up in Bavaria. I have family just on the outskirts of Salzburg in the Berchtesgadener Land in Bad Reichenhall, which is literally the border post between Bavaria. And then Salzburg is right on the other side. And when I went to cover a few Salzburg games last season and, because of the proximity to Munich and it's an hour and a bit drive. It's very fast. So this is going to be a local derby between two cities that are historically actually quite deeply connected as well. And I think we're going to be able to talk about that when we get to the podcast. But, Salzburg was actually is one of the reasons why Munich as a city exists today. Which is, I think maybe that's something that we can also chat about when we get closer to it, but it's going to be an interesting one too, because Jesse Marsch plays really attractive football. He plays an attacking style of football. I think we can always expect a lot of goals from whenever they play. And I think it's going to be one. Austrian sides love to get one over German teams. So they're going to be very motivated to get one over Bayern. So really looking forward to this, Bryce. I'm really excited, but also kind of sad because of COVID-19. I won't be able to go to any of those games.
Yeah, it's affecting us all in different ways, isn't it? Whether it's your work or pleasure or anything else, unfortunately. But it doesn't look to be going away anytime soon. So we're just going to have to soldier on, I think. But yeah, that Bayern Munich versus Atletico Madrid game will be on Wednesday night.
Can I just say one more little thing about this? And I just as a point that just came to me, I think this is going to be the biggest test for Bayern's high defensive line, bigger even than against PSG, because they are going to play very high up, right? And Atletico is going to 100% let them. And it's going to be very different than what Atletico did against RB Leipzig, because Nagelsmann doesn't have a style of football. He plays whatever, right? And he was able to dissect Atletico's style quite well. But this is going to be a very big test for Bayern's defensive line and the way they play football.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a test just to see where Bayern Munich are at, maybe this season as well, because that's an extremely tough game coming up for them. Then at the weekend, they'll be taking on Eintracht Frankfurt. So, Manu, I think we've done well to get through all the teams featuring in Europe and cover their match days. Sorry we haven't had time to maybe cover more of the other games, but as we've said, the games are coming thick and fast. It's hard to squeeze them all in. Though, what we have squeezed in is a few questions from Twitter. So, let's get into them, Manu. So, the first question from Have Angst says, due to the condensed schedule and 5 substitution rule, do you think young players will shine this season? And if so, which players will see the greatest market value increase?
Oh.
We've talked, obviously, Manu, you know, plenty about Jude Bellingham and about Gio Reyna and stuff, but I suppose they're already starting for their first teams. I wonder, is this more a question about the players that would be on the fringes that will get then brought into the side? And I must say, one that seemed to do very well in the cup game for Bayern, you know, was Jamal Musiala. He already created, you know, some YouTube, you know, highlight reel stuff, you know, on that first
youngest goal scorer in Bundesliga history too, Bryce.
So I would say we might see a little bit more of him than if there hadn't been this whole scenario, then maybe would have been planned.
Yes, Jamal Musiala is a player we're going to see a lot. And I think he is a player that is going to see his market value increased accordingly. I think that there was some talk about Joshua Zirkzee going on loan. Obviously, he's stayed at Bayern. I think he's going to get more playing time than people thought. I think that him maybe going out on loan was maybe a little bit of a threat by Bayern Munich's bosses to say, look, you have to work a bit harder. Right. So those are two players at Bayern. I think at Leipzig, there is a young kid called Lasse Samardzic, who they signed from Hertha, right? We talked a lot about him a little bit already last year. I will keep my eye on him. I think that Nagelsmann is going to feed him into the team quite a bit. I think, Gio Reyna, his market value is at 16.5 million euros right now. Dollars, 15 million euros, $16.5 million. You can bet on that going up. That's without a doubt. But that's not someone who's going to get rotated in that much. He's just going to play, right? Because he's been starting quite a bit. I would say Florian Wirtz at Leverkusen is another price, but he's also been starting quite a bit. So is this a player that we're counting as one of those players that are going to go up, or do we already know this, right? So it's a really interesting question. And I feel like that with this kind of question about market values, you always have to look at long term. You see a player playing 2 or 3 good games. That doesn't necessarily affect the market value unless they don't have one yet, right? So it's a great question, but I think we kind of really need to revisit it until we maybe at around match day 10. And, I'd be happy to have that question being resubmitted and maybe having some time to actually think about it.
Yeah, this is it. Unfortunately, the players that seem to be coming to mind are already kind of starting or, you know, featuring for their team. I'm very excited for Hoffenheim about Ryan Sessegnon getting some playing time. He is a real
but
talent.
But is he also one of those that we don't know about yet?
I think he's going to be a regular starter. So again, I don't know whether we can really classify him. I think we're going to see a lot of young players come through. We're going to be impressed with a lot of them. But a lot of them are going to be at that level at the moment that they're unknowns, really. Yeah. So I'm excited for it. And I think as the season goes on, we're going to find out a lot about them. But let's go to the second question. So I mentioned about Dortmund's next game, and that is that they'll be facing Schalke. Yeah, I'm sure Dortmund will be happy to come along and face Schalke in their current form. They have went now 20 games in the Bundesliga without a win. So I've set the scene. We're going to go to Matthias Martin, who asked, will Schalke benefit from the absence of its fans, or will it be a disadvantage? He also asks, is Werder Bremen's recent spell of good results real or just more or less a coincidence? Are Bayern's defensive troubles, just a blip, or is it a real underlying issue for them? So let's start with Schalke first. I suppose let's bring in the third question. The third question, somebody wanted us to talk about Schalke and their ultra situation. So I suppose we go back to Schalke, and again, I'll set the scene, more or less 80 to 100. Ultras turned up outside the ground after the game on Sunday, saying that they wanted to speak to the coaches and the players about, you know, this obviously 20 games without a win, and they were concerned. They said that they want them to fight and show the spirit that they showed in the second half against Union Berlin, that game finishing 1-1. They said if it's at this level, it'll be acceptable, but if it's lower than that, then they're going to be obviously rather vocal about their frustrations. Manu, does this mean that the absence is going to benefit them, or is it going to be a disadvantage?
Well, there's a lot of questions all at once. Let's talk about Schalke, right? Because I think that's the one that we got two questions about that, and I think it is an interesting one. I mean, we spent a lot of time on Sunday talking about Schalke, Bryce, and I think we both agreed that Schalke looked like a Bundesliga 2 side that are not well organized. And what I mean by that is that, you know how we just mentioned Arminia Bielefeld and Paderborn? They are two Bundesliga 2 sides that are still trying to compete in this league by actually playing well organized, attractive football. Schalke just looked like a Bundesliga 2 side. You know, they look like a bad Bundesliga 2 side. And 20 games without a win, this is a long time. And it is, I mean, I'd be at this point, I really fear for them, because there is just no quality in the side. And this is no disrespect to Vedan Ibisevic, a 36-year-old striker. I mean, they had no business getting a point in that game, Bryce. Let's be honest here.
They failed to even get a shot on target in the first half.
So on the goal that they scored was a fluke.
I think the issue is that, you know, that, I mean, yes, maybe, you know, Baum needs more time there, and Naldo, you think, would be helping them out at the back, you know, with his experiences. Obviously, we don't know whether he's a good coach or not.
But Bryce, quality doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah, so this is what we talked about, wasn't it? That sometimes you get a unit that's very strong, but individually they're not that strong. With Schalke, we're not really getting either. We're individually, they're poor at the back. As a unit, they're terrible at the back. There's no attacking threat whatsoever. You just, and if you can't defend, you can't score, what's going to happen? I think Union Berlin are going to be really disappointed that they didn't take all 3 points.
Oh, and they should have. I mean,
it's going to be a long season, and unfortunately, I think the fans being in the ground with the side that we're seeing at the moment, I don't know whether it would make much of a difference.
See, I actually think that maybe the fans in the ground would help, because it does give Schalke that little bit of emotion that they might need to get through the situation. But right now, it's just a cemetery. Right.
Do you think that just at the moment with obviously the silence and there being no fans there, they've got no one to answer to, really?
Yeah.
You know, you just think, it's another game gone.
It's another one. Oh, we drew, whatever. Silence in the stadium, no boo. You can imagine if the fans were in that game. Ho, 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 ho. I mean, they would be bottles of beer flying, they would be yelling, they would be shouting. A stadium, I mean, the roof would come off, right? I mean, they have no one to answer to right now. And like a couple hundred fans showing up at the Veltins Arena, who cares? They're just going to go on their bus and drive off home. I mean, no. There's a reckoning coming at Schalke, Bryce.
Well, Manu, obviously, you're the ultras, you know, expressing their opinion, you know, after the game, and saying that they expect a certain standard of game come this weekend. If things don't go well, what exactly can we expect from the Ultras? Obviously, German football, you've known for a long time. You're going to know the Schalke fans better than some of our listeners. What way do you see them taking this if it's a 4-0 loss and it just looks like they just don't care on the field?
I guess banners at the training ground. But, I mean, we've seen that. It's going to be the usual hate and the usual threats and that kind of stuff doesn't help either. It's so hard. What can you do really as a fan in this situation? And I mean, yes, it's the Revier Derby, right? Next. And, we saw last year what happened at the Revier Derby without the fans. The difference in class, the gulf between Borussia Dortmund and Schalke is massive. I mean, those two teams are not even on the same planet at the moment. And that I personally expect that Dortmund will absolutely smash Schalke, right? And what are the fans going to do about it? What can they do? I mean, we're probably going to get the banners at the training ground before and after. We're going to get the hate. We're going to get Deutsche Welle probably posting about it and playing social justice warriors about it and that kind of stuff. And rightfully so. Not criticizing them, by the way. I agree with them, but I think, does that really help? And I don't know, Bryce. It's, when you look at the whole situation at Schalke, we could probably do a podcast about them every week and the calamities that they have produced and the long-term issues and the problems that have been deeply ingrained in this club since the last people that were in charge. And, it's very unfortunate.
Well, then I suppose we better move to the second question. Another club that, were struggling last year. They seem to have improved things, sitting in seventh place, and that's Werder Bremen. We were asked the question of, you know, is this a spell of good results or is it a bit of coincidence? I mean, if
too early.
Yeah, I think it's too early, and I think their results have made them look better than what they are.
Yeah. Can we revisit this as well? Because it is very early. And remember too that Freiburg had a goal called off in this game, right? So, yeah, let's wait and see. I am not as worried about Bremen this year than I was last year. And that's not because they're better, but I think that with Schalke and Mainz and Bielefeld, there is three clear-cut teams that are just worse. And that's going to help them and maybe give them the time that they need to kind of rebuild a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we know what the Rashica deal is going to be? Obviously, he hasn't moved anywhere.
They're trying again in the winter.
Are we going to see him on the field in a Werder shirt, do you feel?
It's such a difficult one. Like, they had to give him some time off, right? Because of, obviously, you're thinking you're a Leverkusen player, right? You've already signed a contract. The deal is done. And then you find out it's not going through because of a technicality. Like, emotionally, you've gone. You're gone from that club. And from what I'm hearing, they are going to renegotiate in the winter. And try to get this deal across the line. But what do you do with a player like that until then is difficult, right? Because is he fully still there? But at the same time, he also has to play well to get that position in the Leverkusen squad. So, yeah, it's a very difficult situation all around.
Yeah, it is indeed. And I have a feeling we will see him on the field. But what type of player we're going to get, I'm not quite sure. But final topic of the day. This was the loaded question, and the final one was, are Bayern's defensive troubles just a blip, or is there real underlying issues, Manu?
We'll find out this week.
We certainly will. That's a good answer. We'll obviously be able to tell against Atletico Madrid, and then they've got Eintracht Frankfurt as well, who I'm sure will be a stern test for Bayern at the weekend. This podcast has just flown by, Manu. We've had so much to discuss, obviously, with the match days. Once again, apologies that we maybe didn't touch on some more of the games, but with the European matches coming up as well, we had so much on our plates, didn't we? So, and thanks for getting in touch with your questions. We always appreciate that and your listens. Manu and I, that more or less does it, I think. You'll be able to find plenty of other information on Transfermarkt and also Football Grad Live on the websites. And until next week, I've been your host, Bryce Dunn. You can find me on Twitter at BryceDunn11. Auf Wiedersehen.
It wouldn't be the holiday season if there wasn't candy, right? Celebrate the holiday season with the Holiday Crush. They've sprinkled candy with a holiday theme and fun-packed challenges every week for 5 whole weeks, finishing on January 4th. The more challenges you complete, the better your chances of unwrapping delicious rewards. So, are you ready to crush the holidays? Play the Holiday Crush now. Download it from the App Store, Google Play, or Windows Store for free. Terms and conditions apply.